I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everybody, foo followers around the world. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, episode 70, with your host Ben Johnson. That is me. Thank you so much for listening. This is the fifth episode in our sixth season of podcasts. This show has been running since 2016, and over the years we have spoken to many of the leading lights from the world of martial arts action cinema, including many actors, directors, stunt performers, stunt coordinators, and fight choreographers. You can listen to all of our episodes right now via our website, kungfumovieguide.com. You can also find this podcast at all the usual places that you get your podcasts. And if you're a fan of this show and you would like to support what we are doing here, then we do have an option to donate to the show and our website. Head over to paypal.me/kungfumovieguide to donate. Even a small amount will make a big difference. So if you are one of our loyal Foo followers who has already donated to the Kung Fu Movie Guide, then thank you so very much for all of your support. You can get in touch with me and the show via our social media channels. We are on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. We are also on Facebook and Instagram at Kung Fu Movie Guide. And we have an email address, which is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, we have Brahim Chab on the show today. It is a fascinating chat, which I am sure you will enjoy. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers around the world, wherever you are. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen, to download, to stream, whatever it is that you do with this show. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Ben Johnson. I'm the host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. This is episode 70, which is crazy to think. We've reached 70 episodes of this show. It feels like a milestone in some ways. Well, it is a milestone, isn't it? I suppose. Who would have thought when I started this podcast 5 years ago that we'd now reached 70 episodes? That's kind of mad. Anyway, it has been an absolute joy to share these conversations with you all over the years, and I do hope that you have been enjoying listening to them. We have Brahim Chab on the show today. Brahim is also known by his full name, Brahim Achabaki. He is a French martial artist and actor, also a stunt coordinator, fight choreographer and stunt performer. You know Brahim from Boyka Undisputed or Undisputed 4, starring Scott Adkins. He was the main villain in the globe-trotting Jackie Chan film Vanguard from last year. He was in Man of Tai Chi. He was in Big Brother with Donnie Yen, and he's worked a lot with Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's also in Van Damme's quite mysterious and highly anticipated second directorial feature, which has not been released, and it's changed its title a lot over the years. Over a decade, actually, we've been waiting for this. It was called The Eagle Path, and then it was called Full Love for a while. It is now called Frenchie, according to IMDb. When I spoke to Brahim back in March of this year, 2021, he had just wrapped on Monkey Man. This is the directorial debut of the great actor Dev Patel. Brahim has a role in the film. He is also the film's fight choreographer. It'll be coming to Netflix probably next year, I would imagine. Brahim's a very talented martial artist. He's very devoted to his craft, and his career is certainly going from strength to strength. So it was an absolute joy to talk to him for today's episode. There's lots to enjoy, and I will throw over to that conversation very soon. Before I do, I was blown away by A lot of your comments following our previous episode, which featured my conversation with Ron Van Cleef. It was a very powerful episode, without a doubt. Ron was very honest and open with me during that chat, and it did seem to resonate with a lot of you guys listening. So some of the comments from Instagram, for instance, this one came in from the Martial Arts Mania podcast. That's AJ and Gavin. If you're not familiar with their show, then do check out that show if you haven't already. The message reads, "Fantastic episode, my friend. Probably the best interview I've heard with the Black Dragon. Unless you count his original audio commentary for the first DVD release of The Black Dragon's Revenge. That was a treasure trove of martial arts history gems. Thank you so much for those kind words. Very much appreciated." I don't have that DVD. I saw Black Dragon's Revenge, I saw on Amazon, I think. But I would very much like to hear that audio commentary. So would love to check that out. This message was sent to me by Lee Mitchell over email. Thank you so much for this email, Lee. I did just check with Lee that he was happy for me to read this out. So here goes. Lee's email reads, "I want to say what an episode your interview with Ron Van Cleef was. I can't believe what he went through when he was in the army and living in America. I was shocked and appalled what they did to him and said to him because of the colour of his skin. I'm glad you put that out so people can understand what it was like, especially the younger generation now who won't know how bad it was back then. I had a tear in my eye when Ron was talking about that. Very sad. And I'm so glad he made it through and is alive today." Thank you, Lee, for that email. Ron's story is indeed very shocking in places. If you haven't heard it yet, then do check it out. It's the episode before this one, episode 69. And please do feel free to email me if you do have any questions or feedback. I do love to receive messages from you guys. So send any messages over to hello@kungfumovieguide.com. I wanted to also take this opportunity to add a special shout out to my buddy Taimon Singh. Tai's new book is called Born to be Bad, Part 2, Talking to the Greatest Villains in Action Cinema. You may remember when Tai was on the show back in 2018 on episode 30, that's the Bob Wall episode. We discussed his first book, Born to be Bad, Part 1, and you can now finally get your hands on Born to be Bad, Part 2. It's available in paperback and hardback, courtesy of Bear Manor Media. Head over to bearmanor-digital.myshopify.com to pick up your copy of Born to be Bad, Part 2. In this book, Tai talks to the likes of Robert Patrick from Terminator 2, Tony Todd from Candyman, Stephen Lang from Avatar. There are also conversations with Scott Adkins, Mohamed Kesi from Kickboxer, Tong Po, of course, from Kickboxer, Taimar, who was the baddie in Rapid Fire, he's been in so many amazing movies, and many, many more. It is an essential read for all fans of action movies. Tai is a good friend and supporter of the show. He's a loyal Foo follower, and he's also a huge fan and expert in martial arts and action movies and just movies in general. So get your hands on a copy of Tai's new book, Born to be Bad, Part 2. It is out now. Okay, I will now throw over to my conversation with Brahim Chab. Brahim is out there on social media. If you'd like to follow Brahim Chab, his handle on Instagram is at BrahimChab84. A little word of caution, there is some swearing, I think, on this episode. I think there is an F-bomb lurking in here somewhere, so apologies. When that lands, if that bothers you, then you have been pre-warned. I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly, but until then, here we go. Here is my chat with the awesome martial artist, stunt performer, stunt coordinator, fight choreographer, and action star, Brahim Chab. So you are in Thailand currently?
At the moment, I just came back.
Do you live in Thailand?
I've been living in Thailand since 2007. So yeah. Basically what I do is like I started my career in Thailand in the movie business. And after that, you know, I started to work overseas a lot. So what I did is I made Thailand my base. And every time I'm done with a job, I always get flown back to Thailand. So I made Thailand my second home, let's say.
Do you still go back to France quite a bit?
I honestly go back to France just to visit my family.
Family, yeah, of course.
Besides that, no, I don't really have plans to go back to France at the moment for anything.
Yeah, okay. And you find it's still good for work as well, being located in Thailand? I mean, you're very busy, so it must be.
It's to me, you know, if I have to look back at my career and the choices I've made, I think that moving to Thailand was like the best choice I ever made, because it didn't matter where I was, or it didn't matter really. People never paid attention. And most of my work is mostly located around Asia.
Yeah.
So it didn't really make a difference. But for me, I think it was the best choice that I've made, yes.
I noticed it said that you're in post-production, you're involved in Monkey Man. And I just wanted to double check. Is that the project you're working on currently then? Or is that all wrapped? What's the latest with that one?
That's all wrapped. And that was the project I was working on for the last 6 months. I was working
Amazing.
On that, yes.
Amazing. Yeah. What can you say about this? I know it's Dev's directorial debut, so that's exciting. He's a fellow Brit, and seeing him stepping up into an action film as well is super exciting. So I know you're quite heavily involved in this production. Can you say anything about it at this stage?
At the moment, honestly, I cannot say anything about it because I signed NDAs and all
of
that.
Course.
But all I can say is people are going to get blown away by this.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say. I think they're going to see a complete different Mr. Dev Patel in this.
Yeah, amazing. Such a great actor. I can't wait to see this. It's been picked up by Netflix already, so that's exciting. And this is, you're acting in it as well as being the fight choreographer, I believe?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, no more detail there. That's absolutely fine. So it's being described as John Wick in Mumbai. So I like the sound of that. Does that sound, that sounds accurate then, does it?
I would say so. Like I would say it's completely different. And I would say, you know, it's going to be interesting. Like people are going to really, really appreciate it. And I can't wait for people to see it and see what we did on that, because it was a lot of hard work. So people are going to really enjoy it.
You're bringing a lot to the table now as an action director. Do you have a certain style and approach that you want to take to the action that's distinctly becoming your own?
That's correct, yeah. What I'm trying to do basically is I'm trying to find my own style with my own way of doing things. In the past, you know, I was kind of like a little bit unlucky to get certain projects that didn't allow me to show what I could do, which means, you know, I was limited with the production. I was limited with the amount of time. And I was also limited by the fact, like, I can give an example. For example, when I worked on Tekken Kazuya Revenge, I got the job as a fight coordinator on it. But when I got offered the movie was called A Man Called X. It was not called Tekken. So later on in the production, the movie changed to be a Tekken movie. So I started to incorporate all the moves from the game and trying to be really following the game and giving the character, you know, that same style he had in the game. So I did that, but then I got told that it was not a Tekken movie. So I changed everything again. And then when the movie comes out, it's finally a Tekken movie. So the fans didn't like the movie. And I was the one who made the fights for it. But people don't really understand that behind the scenes, there's a lot of things going on. There are decisions that are being made without you knowing it. And then, of course, the guy who's making the fights is going to win. Is going to be the one who's going to get the heat from all of that.
Yeah.
That's why nowadays I'm very cautious about the projects I'm doing. And I would say that My style, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying basically to incorporate as much as possible real martial art with not so much wire. And I'm trying really like to follow, like give the characters on every movie that I'm doing, I'm trying to give them their own identity through the punches and the kicks. I don't really create fights. I create more like a story. Yeah. And it's very important. Most of what I see most choreographers do, the very talented ones, is when they do a fight scene, they are really going to give you a story. It's not only going to be punches and kicks. It's going to be a story starting from A going to B.
When you were speaking there, I was thinking of that extraordinary one-take scene in Extraction that Sam came up with. If you're mixing narrative, drama, acting, and story, and action all in one sequence, that's a pretty good example, isn't it? But, mm-hmm. I mean, are they the sorts of people that you look to for inspiration, would you say, Brahim?
I don't really look at other action directors' work because I don't want to be doing the exact same thing that they are doing. So
yeah,
I kind of like have this love-hate relationship with action. What I don't like to do is I don't like to look at other people's work because they might say like I was inspired by them. Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is I try to find my own way and my own style. If it works, it's great. If it doesn't work that great, let's do better for the next one.
Yeah.
But there is one fight director that really taught me everything that I know and really helped me a lot to find my own way and to even now become a successful action director, a successful fight coordinator. And this man is Tim Mann. Tim Mann is really the person who really kind of took me under his wing when I first came to Thailand. He took me to work with him on some very low budget films. Like I worked with him on Kill Them All. I worked him on Ninja 2 as his assistant. Then he brought me over to be on Boyka to play one of the characters on the movie. He brought me again on Abduction, which is another movie. So Tim really is the guy who kind of like taught me how to make previs, how to edit fights, how to create action, not only setting up a bunch of moves, but kind of like editing the fights as you're doing them in your head, creating fights not on paper but in your brain. And I think if I have to give credit to someone, I'll give complete credit to Tim because he didn't need to do that, you know. And he's been doing a lot of good things for me.
What did he see in you then that made him think, you know, he's got the moves, but you can see he's into this and he could develop into, you know, a great fight choreographer, stunt coordinator one day?
I think what he saw was probably a kid who was a little bit short in money and not having a lot of options and hardworking. So yeah. I think that's what he saw, basically. You know, when I came to Thailand, I didn't come with a lot of money. I had a lot of issues when I first came here because I was not that gifted physically. I was pretty slim. I didn't really speak English that well at the time. And I didn't know anybody. So Tim was the guy who kind of saw that and he was like, okay, well, I was helping him to do fights. Sometime I would film for him. And I think that's what he saw. He saw maybe somebody, you know, who was, you know, hardworking and who would do what he was going to say. And I mean, maybe he saw that I was a bit hungry, let's say. That's the correct word.
You must come into contact with a lot of young stunt people entering the industry. They've got that same thirst, that same hunger. Do you recognize that in some of the people that you're now working with?
I would say, to be honest, no, I don't see that. And I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Because with the rise of social media, I would say a lot of the younger generation of people coming out now, they are very... they are more into like social media, getting views and getting a lot of followers than actually putting a lot of hard work. Back in the days when I started, or even when Tim started, we only had YouTube. We didn't really have Facebook or social. We didn't have Instagram, social media. So what we needed to do is we needed to come cast, put in the hard work, get people to notice you. And the number of followers you had back then, nobody really cared about it. But nowadays, it's almost like I'm getting this vibe of this newcomer sometime messaging me sometime and going like, well, I'm having like 90,000 followers, so you have to get me on your next job. Or some people also sometimes message me asking me like, can you film a premise for me and I'll just post it online. But the whole concept of like filmmaking is to learn. It's not really to show off. You know, learning is the most important. So I would say the fire and the hunger of like the older generation is it's completely different. And back in the days, we had way more opportunities, you know. We had way more martial art movies being made. We had way more action movies being made. So now it's almost like, I don't know, things are changing. I'm very happy that I could, you know, start earlier, like back in the days. I don't think I would have made it if I started right now. I don't think I would have made it, no.
Interesting, because it's more of a popularity contest. Do you think is that what's happened?
Yeah, and also it's more of a popularity contest, and also like you get a lot of people coming out quite aggressive about selling themselves about something they are not. They say like, oh yeah, I was this guy, or I was doing this, I was doing that, and later on these people, they can kind of like buy themselves into the industry by lying or some stuff, you know, saying like wrong things. But then later on, you know, some people find out, and then the whole image of these guys disappear.
But that's the thing that I hear time and time again is, you know, the proof's in the pudding. There's a reason why, you know, guys like yourselves and people get hired as much as you do. It's because you're hardworking and you're nice and clearly talented and good to work with. Like, there's no real, the people with the really big egos they do get found out eventually, don't they? I mean, that just seems to be the way the industry works, right? Would you agree with that?
I agree completely, yes. Because if you got, you know, nothing to really prove, and you're coming as yourself, as this is who I am right here. I am Brahim, and I'm coming with this knowledge. I'm giving it to you for your movie, whether it's acting or whether it's like being behind the camera, taking care of the action. That's what you get. But then if you're starting to be like, oh, here I am this guy, I am that guy, I'm trying to do the job of this guy, I'm trying to be a weapon consultant, I was this guy, this expert in this and that expert in that, people find out one day or another. And I think it's very important in the industry to come honest. Nobody really cares about like what you've done in the past. To be honest, who's gonna care if I was in a kumite and I knocked out like 55 people with their zero losses? Nobody's gonna care about this. We do movies, which is fake. This is just, you know, a bunch of punches. Nobody needs to get hurt. Sometimes I hear some people saying, oh yeah, but my shit is the real thing. Well, good for you. Go in a cage or go in a ring. That's perfect. But movies are movies. So we don't really need to lie about who we are. We just filmmakers who are good at martial art, let's say.
My lord, for the sake of the Buddha, please spare Shaolin.
If you're a martial artist, you want to break into action movies, I mean, what would your advice be?
If a martial artist wants to break into the movie scene to be an actor, I would say he needs to learn how to act. There's a misconception about if I'm very good at martial arts, I'm going to be the best actor there is. It might have been okay back in the days in the 80s and 90s, you know, because there was this image of like Jean-Claude Van Damme coming out with just being a karate expert, or Jackie Chan being from the opera, Arnold Schwarzenegger being a bodybuilder. But those days are gone. Like that was the 80s, the 90s. Nowadays, if somebody really wants to be like an actor who's going to do action movies, I would say the martial art is secondary. What he needs to do, he needs to become a very good actor and then promote himself as an action actor, that someone is who is good at martial art. That's what people forget. Like, I'll take an example. Scott Adkins, for example, is a very good martial artist. But if you look back in his career, he acted in a bunch of soap operas in England, right? He was very popular in England as an actor already. But then he got the opportunity to become an action star because he could act.
Yeah.
So now people became so good at creating action that they can literally take anyone, train him for a couple of months, adjust the camera work, hire very good stunt guys to make the lead actor look good. And that's what's making now the stuntman job is almost now becoming of like, I'm going to do only the falls. I'm not going to really do the fighting. So now the actors really want to do the action themselves because there's so much competition right now, and action is what sells a lot now. Everybody's jumping onto that train.
There is a demand for action, but the standard is really quite high. I mean, how do you feel as an action director now, as you're getting these really big movies? Do you feel that kind of pressure?
I wouldn't say pressure. I would say the pressure is something that, you know, I have 14 years experience in the movie business. So the pressure is something I can deal with it very easily. You know, at the end of the day, I'm doing a movie. It's not the end of the world. We're just doing a fun thing. I try to make it as fun as possible. Yeah. Now, the only pressure I might get is when you throw punches, kicks with an actor, the actor sometimes taking his own falls, taking his own reactions and all that. Sometimes you're having a lot of pressure coming from the producers because they kind of like make you understand, well, this is the lead actor of the movie. So if something happened to him, the production is going to get pushed back you know, you get a lot of pressure in that aspect. But to make the action look good with the actor, you need an actor who's going to be able to come to the rehearsals, and an actor who's going to be really focused in like, okay, well, I have to show up to do this thing. Otherwise, that's not going to happen. And don't get me wrong, it's very important to make the actor do his own action and to make him do the fighting and all that. But it's also very important to keep them safe. So at the end of the day, it's like almost like I say, it's like a love-hate relationship. Like sometimes you want to be like, oh, I would get this shot so easily if I would put my stunt guy to do it.
Yeah.
But then you have to remember, okay, this is the lead actor, so he wants to do it himself. So let's facilitate. Let's have the right stunt guys. Let's have the stunt guys train with this actor for a couple of weeks. So like this, everybody gets used to each other. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, trust. Trust is the number one thing you need. You need the actor to trust whoever he's going to fight with. That's why if you look at John Wick 1, 2, 3, it's 8711 we did this. Can you work with these stunt guys from pre-production to rap?
Yeah.
So everybody knows each other. You know, I know how you're going to punch. I know how you're going to kick. I know how you're going to react. I know your body movement. I know everything.
Trust is also vital when you're a stunt performer because, you know, you're putting your life in these people's hands. In many situations, you know, it's dangerous, you know, and it's still, you know, accidents do still happen.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that situation where you felt, I don't know, a bit uncomfortable, maybe we're rushing this, I don't think we've done enough rehearsal here, there's something doesn't feel right, and you've had to stop and call something like that out?
Of course, yeah, it happens. I mean, I had like many situations like this, but one that I remember the most is I was on a boat one time, doubling a French actor on a movie, and I was handcuffed to a police door, and I remember telling the prop guy, "Give me the key of that handcuff," and they are like, "Oh no, don't worry, if you fall in the water, the door will float and you can float." I'm like, no, just give me the key. So I was like, you need to give me the key now. So they were telling me like, oh no, maybe this guy is scared for nothing, blah blah blah. So I got the key finally, and then I was the passenger on the boat, and the person who was doubling the other actor, that was an actress who was getting doubled by another stunt performer, drives that boat like crazy through the river in Bangkok, and she lost control of the boat, and then plaf, we started to go in the water, and there I was like drowning with this police door attached to my arm. So luckily, right before the boat goes down, I managed to unlock myself. Then that door, they told me it was going to float. It didn't float. It just went down the river. And there I was struggling to swim. And finally, you know, we managed to climb on the boat made it back to land. But accidents do happen in the movie. And most of the time, it's quite ugly. People lost their lives or different body parts, you know, with this kind of accident. It's the action movies. That's how I see it. Every time somebody tells me, like back in the days when I was doing stunts, they would tell me like, "Oh, we have a very easy job." Those would be the ones I would be very careful about. If somebody told me, "You got a hard job here," okay, that's fine.
And it doesn't seem to be something that's distinguishable between budgets either. You hear about horrible, you know, accidents happening on big mainstream, big budget movies, as well as you'd think maybe they would cut corners on the lower budget stuff. But, you know, that's not always the case, is it? It's not always to do with that. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's mostly about like, most of the time when something happened that is quite ugly, it's always about somebody is making a call and you got a few people around that person who are not having the guts to tell him this is the wrong judgment here. So I've been having trouble in the past that slowed down my career actually, because I was many times the one when I was still doing stunts back in the days to tell certain people, "I'm not going to do this," or "I'm not allowing myself to go through this." And sometimes other stunt guys would tell me, "Don't do that or you're going to not work anymore." But I found out that, you know, you have one life. It's not worth to die over a movie shot. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like doing movies, but when I get a job, the whole point is like, do the job and leave to do the next one.
"I've killed many men with this pole, but still, I don't want to kill you yet."
You were great in Vanguard, by the way. That was a meaty role for you. I don't think I've seen you. I mean, you're the main heavy, basically, in that movie. Just talk me through that. That working with Jackie, I mean, that has been a rewarding experience for you then, Brahim.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the whole Jackie Chan thing, I think every stunt guy, every action guy want that stamp in his resume. It's like almost if you don't have that stamp, well, you're not really fully, you know, confirmed to be like this really, really good action person.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, it was like, first of all, you know, my whole career started because of Jackie. I watched his movies when I was, you know, 14 years old. He was the guy who made me start martial arts. So to become involved in his team and work on so many movies now with him and his team, you know, it was a dream come true. And it first started in 2014. I worked on Dragon Blade as a action actor on the movie. Then when I did that,
By the way, no, that gets overlooked. I think that's a pretty good Jackie Chan movie. Yeah,
Yeah, very good movie, and very hard working on that movie because we shot that in the Gobi Desert. You know, when I first did that movie, I was like, okay, well, good. I've worked with Jackie now. Thank you. But I was thinking that was it. Then I went back home, like, you know, like very thankful and great experience. And then the next year came and they called me again to go to Russia to work on Russian movies there. I went there in Russia with them, and then they called me again to work on Bleeding Steel, which I worked on for 7 months. Oh no, before that I worked on The Foreigner for...
Yeah, that was here.
10 days. Yeah, that was in England, yes.
In the UK, yeah.
Yeah, maybe for 10 days, and then I went to Bleeding Steel for 7 months. After that, I remember I went to do, you know, keep working. I've worked on several projects after. There was Project X that was getting shot. If I remember, yes, they called me for it, but then it didn't happen. But then Vanguard came along, and for some reason, one of the stunt coordinators in Jackie team showed my pictures to Stanley Tong, and then they offered me this part of Broto. And I think because, you know, I've acted before in a couple of films. You know, I've acted in Boyka Undisputed. I have quite a good role there. So it was in my reel, the one that I showed them. And I think maybe Stanley Tong saw, okay, well, I could deliver some lines and, you know, I was able to do all my action. They wouldn't worry about getting me doubled or, you know, not me not being able to move well. So... Yeah. They came to me and they gave me the offer for the role. I took it, and then it was 9 months of work on that movie. I went to basically Taiwan. I went to Dubai, India, China. They shot also in Tanzania, England as well. So it was, to me, that was the best experience that I had so far with Jackie, because it was kind of like, well, here is all your hard work that you've did for us. Here, we give you this very nice role. Because I saw a lot of people work for Jackie, and they never got really... first of all, you know, I've never been part of Jackie's team, because Jackie's team is basically, you know, it's kind of like almost like a family, you know. They don't really get the people in based on a skill set. It's mostly because how people interact with Jackie, how people are going to be really devoting themselves to the company. So to me, I always felt like they would call me when they needed me, which I was fine with. And I always went and I did my job for them. So I didn't expect them to give me that kind of role, even though I'm not part of their team. So when I came in and they gave me this role, at first I never saw a script. I never really understood how important was the role. And then I started to see all these lines of dialogue and, you know, all these scenes, and I'm going to be in this country, that country. Then I realized, okay, that's going to be something important. And then when I saw the final product, when I was dubbing my voice in China, then I understood, okay, this is going to be something great. So
it was at that point that you realized then, was it? So you'd already done all the filming, and then it wasn't until you were doing the ADR. How funny.
Yeah, because, you know, I have this thing, like, I never really get my hopes too high for any project, because I know this industry how it is, you know. Scenes get deleted. Roles that were important become very minor roles. So I always keep my head cool. I don't really talk about it. I don't really mention it too much on social media until the thing is, I know already how it's going to look like. Like when I did Boyka Undisputed, for example, I didn't really mention it. I didn't really talk about it that much until the movie came out.
Yeah.
For Vanguard, it was the same. Later on, I saw the posters with me on it, and I saw how they promoted me for the movie.
Yeah,
and I'm just thankful, man, for this opportunity, because it really did open a lot of doors for me, that Vanguard movie.
Yeah, and working with your childhood hero. I mean, you know, he's an absolute legend, Jackie Chan. Was that everything that you dreamed it would be, and like your interactions with him, working with him and seeing him on set, you know, what was that like? Yeah.
I mean, Jackie, you know, he's just like what you see in the movies. He's he's very humble. He's been doing that all his life. So sometime, you know, I remember the first movie I've done with him, I was kind of like a fanboy.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw him the first time, I was like, oh my God, that's Jackie. Wow. I was really amazed. And later on, you start to understand he's just a normal person. He's very normal. And so it's everything I imagined, you know, like he's a very busy man, let's say.
Yeah.
When he comes on set, you know, he has, you know, his team set up everything for him. He always come on set. He has all these candy, cakes, ice cream. He gives that to everybody. He took us to 5-star hotels and restaurants for dinners. So he's a very, very, I would say, kind-hearted person.
Yeah.
Because he always look out for his team, always take everyone to dinner, always, you know, try to put his team in other movies than his movies so they can work when he's shooting. So, yeah, he was everything that I was expecting.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
To go from doing stunt work on Dragon Blade and then suddenly you're the main heavy in this huge, you know, globe-trotting, you know, Jackie Chan movie. I mean, you must have to pinch yourself. That must be quite an amazing
thing to have got to. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, I was expecting someone like a Scott Adkins or someone like that to play that role I was doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that shows you that... You know, I always have this thinking in my head that I'm never satisfied with what I'm doing. It's a little bit a good thing and a bad thing because sometimes, you know, I tend to think a lot about how to get better, how to get a better role, a better kick or a better fall. I'm kind of like a psychopath in this way because I'm never happy with what I'm doing. So to kind of like get this opportunity, you know, to go from just being a stunt guy on Dragon Blade and then becoming like the main bad guy in that movie. Yeah. I mean, to me, you know, it's kind of like a great experience, but at the same time, now I'm like, well, how am I going to top up this? How am I going to do better than that? You know what I mean? So now my whole world and my whole thinking is like, well, now I need to do something better than that.
I mean, are you still searching for those acting roles, those roles in front of the camera, or are you quite happy now?
Absolutely.
To work behind? Okay.
No, absolutely. I always look forward to be in front of the camera. That's something that I really enjoy doing. I really want, you know, to push more into that direction because why not? I mean, I can make action for films, that's correct, but why not push into that direction too? Because my body physically is 100%, and I'm still at, you know, I'm not old. I'm still, you know, I'm 36 years old. So I do think that in the future there will be more opportunities for me in that road.
See, I just want to kill you like dogs.
You came into the industry as a tricker. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, I was a martial artist, let's say, not really a trickster, because that's where people get it wrong. I have a black belt in karate wado ryu, and I, at the time, I was also a brown belt in aikido. So tricking was kind of like something I did to complement my martial art training. So I came in as a martial artist with good tricking, let's say.
Well, amazing tricking. I wanted to know, because in France, you were teaching tricking. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, yeah. I was teaching in a place called X-Swipe. And basically, the owner of that place took us to Thailand for a casting, yes, for Ong Bak Thu.
I just wonder, how do you teach tricking? I mean, is it something that you constantly challenging yourself? Oh, maybe I can do one extra flip there, or maybe I can extend and do a kick there. Is that how that sort of works?
Yeah, that's basically, you know, if I always use skateboard as to compare. So, you know, skateboard, the way, you know, you do all these figures with the skate and all that, well, it's the same with tricking. What you do is basically, you know, you have the basic move. I'm going to take an example. Let's say a spin hook kick, okay? So you're going to use the spin hook kick. Then the evolution to that spin hook kick, then jump 360 spin hook kick. Then once you get that down, you're going to do a 720. So you're going to do the same concept, and you're going to add one spin. Then you hook kick the 720. Then you're going to do a 1080. At the time, that's where it was stopping, 1080. Then you do a 1080 and you kick. Now you get kids doing 1440. All kind of crazy stuff. So
crazy.
Tricking is like an evolution. It's like you it's kind of like skateboard or ice skating. You know, you take one move and then you kind of like put your own flavor into it. And at the time in France, you know, not many people were doing it or was doing that. So we were new to this.
Is that when you got to know Tim Mann then quite well? Because I know Tim Mann comes from a sort of tricking background as well.
So there was this website called bailang.com.
Yeah.
That was a website where all the tricksters would send their video, like a sampler, and then the owner of the website would post it, and then you could download it. Mostly it took one day to download just like a 2-minute video back then.
Yeah.
So I saw team videos there when I was just maybe 16 years old, and I remember emailing Tim, telling him, like, you know, if he's doing movies, and because he would have like clips from movies in that sampler. So later on, when we came to Thailand, we went to train in this place, and there was Tim Mann. So I remember meeting him there, and then he reminded me, like, oh, remember you used to send me emails? I'm like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, you send me emails. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, cool. That's how I met Tim, yes.
Through Tim, you get to work with Scott, because you were doubling when Scott was injured for Ninja 2, I believe.
Correct.
You could do all of those moves, so you sort of stepped in to double for Scott. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, it was not about Scott cannot do any of these moves. You know, he can do every move that I do, even better than I do them. The thing was, I think it was during the fight in the bar fight. I think he did a spin hook kick and then he pulled a muscle in his back. So the production was either going to stop or either they're going to use someone that kind of look like Scott, same body type, and we can do these moves. Obviously, I was already working on the movie. I played Scott during the pre-production. I did the previous.
Yeah.
And I was assisting Tim with the fights and stunt coordinating. So then I got to double Scott for those spin kicks. To me, that experience was great because, first of all, I got to work with Scott and Isaac, and I got to work with Tim as well. And on that movie, I learned a lot. And the great thing about Scott is, when the movie came out, this is where you see that Scott Adkins is a great human being and a very, very honest person, because most actors would say, well, I did all that stuff by myself, but Scott was very honest and he gave me great credit, and he didn't even need to do that. So I always, you know, have a lot of admiration for him, for what he's done in his career, and the way he kind of like helped me out a lot, because he didn't need to tell anybody that, you know, I hurt my back and I needed this French guy to double me on the movie.
Yeah.
And then that opportunity led to Undisputed 4. And that's the same thing, you know, he didn't really need to accept. Well, why would he accept his stunt double to step in one of the major roles in the movie? To go opposite of him. So, like I said, you know, he was good to me, very, very good to me.
But is that unique within the industry to have that kind of attitude? Do you think it is quite collegiate and everyone does sort of, you know, they know that everyone's working towards the same end goal ultimately?
I would say yes and no, because many actors I've worked with, they only think about themselves, and that's how they look like, or that's how the movie is me. Like, that's basically what the vibe you get. But with Scott Adkins, no. He always look out for people to look the best as they can be. He always, like, he will never go like, oh, I don't want you to use that move. Or, no, I don't want you to do this kick. Or, no, I don't want this guy to get this close-up. He never did any of that. He always been very much like, okay, this is your moment now. Yeah. So do the best you can, and I'll make sure that I'm not going to put any brakes on you. So if you want to go all out, that's the moment right now. Yeah. So this is why, you know, I always enjoyed working with Scott Adkins, because first of all, he's very, very talented for fighting. He's a very good actor. And outside of the camera, he's normal human being. I mean, you can talk with him about anything. You can talk to him about UFC, about boxing, or, you know, fighting or anything. You know, he's a very, very simple person.
And what was it like then for Boyka 4, you know, Boyka Undisputed, stepping up into that role? I think that was the first time I really, oh no, maybe it was Man of Tai Chi. I remember you were Man of Tai Chi. But that was the first time you really stepped up into, you know, a big role like that.
Yeah.
Was that quite intimidating? You're stepping into a franchise as well, and not only that, one of the best modern martial arts franchises that that there has been, you know, and such an iconic role for Scott as well. Just wondered that your experiences on that film, was it hard work?
Let's say it this way. It was the best working environment I ever got to work on. Like, Isaac Ferrantin is like the best action director, genius director, producer ever. Scott Adkins was amazing to work with. Then you have Tim Mann making the fights. And I didn't come in with pressure. I came in with joy. I was so happy to get on that movie that all the pressure was non-existent. I mean, I did know that I would need to train to gain muscles and to kind of like keep in good shape, because Scott Adkins in the movie is like pretty big and solid. So I was like, at the time when they gave me the green light and they told me, okay, we're going to cast you in this, I was working on Never Back Down 3 in Thailand with Michael J. White. And I remember I was doing the fight scene with Jija on the ring, and I was kind of happy about it, doing that fight scene. But at the same time, I was kind of thinking like, oh man, I wish I could do like more than just do this fight scene. I wish I could, you know, do more kicks or more of that. So a couple of hours later, my phone ring and Tim tell me like, okay, we get they're going to bring you for boycott. The producer is going to call you. And I was thinking, okay, I'm going to go there and maybe be one of those fighters getting his ass kicked, or, you know, maybe like just come in, 1-2 punch and that's it. And then they send me the script and I read it and I see this Igor. I'm like, oh, wow, okay, though, this is like a pretty fucking big role. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I need to better get ready for this. So what I did is, there was a gym where we were shooting Never Back Down 3. So I would work out in the morning before we shoot. I would bring my food on the set, eat. Then in the evening, I would go to basically train again in a gym. And that was it. And I wrapped Never Back Down on the 28th of June. And on the 29th of June, I was off to Bulgaria to shoot Boy Can Dispute It. And when I first came in, we shot the fight scene with Boyka first. That was the first thing we shot.
Was Tim very much like, well, what have you got? You know, just show us, you know, what can you bring to this? Was that how that choreography worked?
Well, the thing is, with that kind of movie, you know there's a list of people who want to work on this movie that goes huge list of people. Every martial art actor on the planet wants to work on that kind of movie franchise.
They don't come along very often, do they? Let's be honest.
Yeah, this is a one-time experience at most sometimes. So when it comes knocking on your door, you make sure that, okay, you're going to be ready 100%. Yeah. So me, my main concern was I didn't want to let Tim down, because Tim is the one who kind of like brought to their attention that, look, listen, we have Brahim for this role. Tim convinced Isaac, and then Isaac convinced Scott. And then after that, I had the green light of the three heavies in the movie, which is Tim, Isaac, and Scott. So once they said, yes, we bring the Brahim to Bulgaria. So then my main concern was like, okay, these guys are giving me like one of the biggest opportunity of my career. I better not let them down. So to me, it's not pressure. To me, it's like, I'm going to do my best. If it means I have to fall my head first on this ring, I'm going to do it. So I came in with like very, very, very hard work ethic. And the good thing about this is I didn't get this role early in my career. I got it after I've done countless stunt jobs and plenty small little roles here and there, like on Man of Tai Chi and all that. Yeah. So to me, it was kind of like, well, here is an opportunity for you to shine. Do your best.
They say you're tough, so I think I'll find out just how tough you are.
Well, I'll tell you this. You'll regret it, because it's the last thing you'll do.
We'll see!
You've worked with Van Damme a few times now, I think, over your career.
Yeah.
I know he's Belgian, but was he someone who was, you know, quite prominent in your life growing up? Was he a bit of an idol, would you say?
To be honest, I didn't see Bloodsport until I started doing movies, like, I'm honest. What I liked about Van Damme was kind of like the body he was bringing on screen, you know, this whole bodybuilding, this nicely shaped action hero. So he motivated me to start working out.
I know you worked on Pound of Flesh, but you've worked on this film, which is his, it's changed titles so many times. I think it's called Frenchie now. I checked on IMDb. Can you tell us anything about this project?
Yeah, well, it went basically, that was one of the first movies I've worked on.
Like, yeah, this was years ago, wasn't it?
That was years ago. I was a kid. I've worked on the movie in 2008, I remember.
Yeah.
Summer 2008. And I remember I did like four castings to be on this movie. That was
right.
300 people showed up at the casting. Then he ended up keeping me and another guy. to be on the movie. So I remember I did this fight scene in a garage with him. Yep. And then I kept on being like, I was playing one of the bodyguards of the bad guy in the movie. My name was Sergey in the movie. So yep. I remember when we did the movie, then he needed some scenes where he needed to be stunt doubled. So he put me to be stunt doubled as well on the movie. Then the movie first started being called Full Love. Then it got changed to The Eagle Path.
Yeah.
And then they went to Bulgaria, I think, and they added some footage to the movie. But for some reason, it never came out. Like, Jean-Claude actually showed me a couple of versions of this movie when I worked with him again on Pound of Flesh. I remember I went to his trailer. I would always go eat with him in his trailer maybe 4 or 5 times while we were shooting Pound of Flesh. He would invite me to his trailer and we would eat and speak French together.
Yeah.
And he showed me a couple of times some of the cuts of the movie. And I asked him, like, Jean-Claude, how come you don't release it? And he was saying to me something about, like, it's not the right time, or he wants a certain distribution for the movie. Maybe he wants like a theatrical release or something along those lines. But I saw a couple of, the movie is completely done for years.
Yeah.
It's just like he's been re-editing the movie. I think there has been, I don't know, man. I don't know how many versions of that movie it has been.
I think because, sort of around Pound of Flesh, he had a complete version then. I think yes. he even showed it at Cannes Film Festival, maybe. Is that right?
I think he showed it at Cannes Film Festival. I think also he showed it to another film festival.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened along the way, but...
But you've seen the bits that you're in and it's looking good.
Yeah, I mean, I saw not only the bits I was in, I saw the bits, you know, I saw many scenes from the movie. I remember him showing me that and telling me it's going to come out soon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jean-Claude is a great guy, man. I mean,
yeah,
you know, people don't give credit to Jean-Claude enough. He's such a good guy. Like, you know, he would always call me on the set to go to his trailer, eat with him. He would always like talk French to me. Sometimes he would like kind of like, you know, call the catering and tell them, okay, bring some fruits for the stunt guys. He's a good guy, man. You know, he's like,
In
France, a lot of people give him a bit of like trouble because I have the same problem myself, because I've been living so long away from Europe that my French kind of became my second language now. So sometimes I would speak French to people and then throw a word in English in it. And then they would think like, well, I'm kind of like trying to be snobbish in a way, like why I'm not speaking French. And sometimes he got a bit of hate in the past because he would go into some TV shows, speak French and use English words in between in the sentences. So I have the same problem as him. And you know, it's Jean-Claude is a good guy, man. Really, really good guy. You know, I would like to work with him again. You know, he's a very interesting character.
And we should say, obviously, this movie is the second film that he's directed as well. So there is a lot of anticipation out there. And I guess because, you know, there's so many different versions and no one's yet been able to see it. It seems like there's a new version of it that's coming out at some point.
I have no idea.
No idea.
I just want this movie to come out so I can see my... You know, normally you watch a movie, you do a movie, and then 6 months later, it's coming out, right? So you didn't really age that well when you see the movie, right? You kind of almost look the same. But here, I'm getting a kick out of this because the movie is going to release. And when I look at it, I'm going to see myself as like, you know, a 24-year-old guy, you know,
15 years ago. Yeah.
It's almost going to be like one of those interstellar movies. Like I've been on a mission somewhere in space and I'm coming back. Everybody aged. And I didn't.
Is that one-eyed bastard here? Who the hell are you? You dare call our boss that?
Another great movie that you were in was Big Brother, the Donnie Yen film from a couple of years ago. What a great fight scene you're in there, where he's on the lockers and he's kicking all the lockers over. The choreography is fantastic. What was that experience like working with Donnie, another legend?
It was great. I mean, you know, I remember I got on the movie, my friend Mike Leader was...
He's in it, isn't he?
He's in it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in it, yeah. My friend Mike Leader got me on the movie, and then I got there in Hong Kong, and I shot the fight scene with Donnie. I was there maybe for 10 days in Hong Kong doing that movie.
Yeah.
And working with Donnie, you know, like, again, it's like one of these stamps for action guys, you know, like,
yeah,
that's it. You've worked with Donnie. So to me, it was a great experience. Donnie was very nice. In between takes, he would, you know, sit down with us and talk to us about his career, about what it takes to be an action actor or a martial arts star like he is. He was very precise, very dedicated. He knows where to place the camera. Kenji Tanigaki, to all his credit, you know, his stunt team is amazing. You know, he has his Japanese stunt team taking care of everything. So again, yeah, it was a great experience. Sometimes, you know, I tell myself, you know, when I look back at my career, I always tell myself, you know, I don't know who to thank, you know, for all the good things that happened in my career, because, you know, I've been lucky enough to do so much in a small amount of time. So I almost feel like, well, this is a great gift, but it has to cost something. And later on you know, I realized it costed, yes, because I really put my heart into this whole career. My whole life has been evolving around my career, which is, you know, I didn't really spend a lot of time with my family. I didn't really have a lot of social life, like going out partying or like what other people do, you know, after work and all that. People always say, well, you're lucky. Well, no, I'm not lucky. I really put in a lot of hard work, and I think that's what people have to realize. There is no shortcuts. It's a lot of hard work and a lot of devotion and passion.
Did you have a goal when you started this? Or have you very much just been someone who's been like, well, whatever opportunity comes along, I'll just see how that goes? Or do you have a sort of grand plan?
My plan was basically what I was telling myself was I want to be in the movie as a stunt performer. I didn't see the big picture back then.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, okay, if I can make a few bucks getting kicked or maybe punched or falling down a stair, yeah, I'll take that. I didn't really have a lot of, like, let's say, like, hopes.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, you know, I started to look at people like Scott Adkins, and I look at the career of someone like Donnie Yen or Jackie Chan, Van Damme even, and I realized all these people, they all started somewhere. They all started, you know,
yeah,
small, and then they started to go bigger and bigger. So I started to visualize myself like, okay, well, what do I need to do to get to higher in life, to get to that kind of like certain level where I'm going to be able, you know, to get to roles like Vanguard or Boy Can't Dispute It. Yeah. Then I said to myself, okay, well, I need to train myself, first of all, and I need to build my body, and I need also, you know, to learn how to act and all that stuff. So from there, you know, I put myself 100% into it with no breaks at all. Just like, don't look at anything else. Just keep going.
Yeah.
Don't care about the achievement. Just climb the mountain. Don't look back, just go straight forward.
Do you find yourself in a situation where there is plenty of opportunity out there?
There is, yes. There is, like, you know, when people start to talk about, like, oh, there's so much competition. Actually, there is not. The thing is, there's so much work out there. Even during COVID, you know, I've been able to work during COVID. And if I wanted, I would be in Turkey right now doing another project, but I didn't take it. But the thing is, there's opportunity for people who are implanted already in the industry. So the advice I give to people is always, you know, in when there's a lot of work like this, if you're starting up, try to do as many jobs as possible, like a lot of quantity. But as you evolved in your career and as you start to get a bit of a name, start to choose your projects and, you know, think about it wisely and what can bring you, you know, a good experience, or rather than I'm going to do 20,000 projects, but they're all going to be shot on an iPhone. You know what I mean?
So what sparks the interest now? Is it just that, you know, there's people that you trust you've worked with before, or are you looking for new opportunities working with different people, or, you know, what's attracting you to projects then?
To be honest, what's attracting me nowadays is, like, for example, when I get a project like Monkey Man with Dev Patel, I know that Dev Patel is a very, very good actor. And I do know it's his directorial debut. So something like this attracts me. Then if I get something like Vanguard, it attracts me as well. But let's say, you know, if someone called me to just be a stunt guy or to be bad guy number 55, something like that, you know, first of all, I don't want to do stunt work anymore, because I do think, you know, that's not something that I enjoy doing anymore. Second, in terms of like money and in terms of life, I came to a point where financially I'm doing very well, and nowadays I just want to do work that makes me evolve in my career and also makes me happy, that when I go to work, I feel happy. So I did some jobs back in the days, working, let's say, in the middle of Rajasthan in India, doubling an actor with 50 degrees Celsius outside, wearing a wig, a fake beard, a full harness for hours. And then I would do this maybe like for 2 months straight, working every day, getting pulled on the wire, and all the jobs like similar to that. So I came to a point in my life where I'm like, okay, I rather do projects that are making me happy and also are going to make me better at my job, and also going to allow me to display what I can do. If it's a job that is in front of the camera, I want something that is going to allow me like to show myself as an actor, as a martial artist. If it's something, a job that I'm behind the camera, like a fight coordinator, I want a movie that is going to allow me, you know, to work with a good cast, good director, allow me to bring my stunt team with me. So like this, you know, I know that the final result is going to be good.
Well, I can't wait for that movie. I'm very excited.
Me too. Me too.
Brahim, listen, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah,
so,
can I do just one last thing before
I
go?
Of course you can. Yeah.
Okay, I just want, you know, to give a little shout out to a few people. I just want to give a shout out, you know, to my friend Tim for everything he's done for me. I want to give a shout out to my good friend, also Mike Leader. He's been amazing for my career. He's actually the one who suggested me for Monkey Man.
Oh,
he
wow,
brought me
great.
Over on Man of Tai Chi. He brought me over on the Big Brother Abduction. Yeah. He's been like a fantastic person in my career. I want to say thank you to Scott Adkins as well, you know, for, you know, allowing me to get my ass kicked by him in Boyka and doubling him also on Ninja. I want to say thank you to Isaac Florentine, you know, thanks to him, you know, he's been casting me, you know, in Boyka. I want to say thank you as well for Jackie Chan's stunt team, you know, for trusting me, bringing me on all those projects, you know, and to whoever, you know, likes my work out there, you know, thank you so much. It means a lot to me. I hope I can bring more to the table in front and behind of the camera. And thank you guys for, you know, supporting me.
No worries at all. Well, I'm a big fan, Raheem, so yeah, do keep in touch and look forward to whatever projects you're working on next.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you take care. Have a good evening.
You too. Have a good day. Bye.
Brahim Chab there. Very cool to chat to Brahim. Very much enjoyed that. He's got so many great martial arts movies to his name. And, you know, he's worked all over the world as well. There's too many great movies in that filmography to mention. We eagerly anticipate the release of Monkey Man. Of course, that is coming to Netflix at some point, probably within the next year or so, and we cannot wait to see what Brahim does next. So you can follow Brahim Chab on Instagram. His name on that platform is at BrahimChab84. And yeah, go and watch him in Vanguard. Go and watch Big Brother, Undisputed 4, The Driver. We didn't mention The Driver. The Driver is a Mark Dacascos zombie film. Brahim's the stunt coordinator in that movie. I think he had a small part in it as well. Go and watch Abduction as well. That's another Scott Adkins movie that Brahim worked on. Never Back Down, No Surrender as well. He's in that. I think we mentioned that. Anyway, lots of Brahim Chab movies. Thank you so much to Brahim for taking the time to talk to me for today's episode. And a huge thank you to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened to this episode all the way to the very end. Thank you so much. For doing that, your reward will be another new episode of the podcast in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, of course, I wish you well. Do stay safe, do take care, and I will be back very soon with another great guest from the world of martial arts movies, only on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Until then, do take care, and bye for now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.